When should I quit my job?
एक साल देते हैं फिर देखते हैं. No, that's not how it works.
I've talked to 100 potential customers, but out of them only 10 people bought in.
Hi, welcome to Zach's Hard to Biz. I'm Ankita.
And I am Zareen, and we are Zach. A lot of entrepreneurs have this doubt. When is the right time to quit your full-time job and become a full-time entrepreneur? And it's something that really gives you sleepless nights when you need to make that transition. Didn't you go through it?
Yes, I did. And I think today this conversation is going to be super interesting because we are going to be discussing the steps that you need to take before you transition from that job to being that entrepreneur and do that in a very comfortable manner so that the whole journey is very smooth.
Right. In fact, just this morning, I had a friend of mine who called me and he has this entire business idea that we discussed. Right. And he asked me this very simple question on WhatsApp. When should I quit my job? I said, hold on.
Right?
So everybody goes through this. It's just such a pertinent thing. And I was thinking about my own story. And as you know, I've had two entrepreneurial stints. The first one was for 4 years after having worked in corporate for 3 years. And the second one was after I'd worked in corporate for 8 years. But the first time around, I remember I became an entrepreneur almost by chance because I think I was following somebody else's entrepreneurial journey and I'd kind of jumped onto that dream. Mm-hmm. But it was very different. I think that time I was doing it for different reasons. It wasn't for myself. I think it was to Patao, my husband, you know, because it was his dream. And I kind of jumped onto that. I thought I'm going to get brownie points. So I pretty much jumped into it. But the second time round, it was much more planned because I was sitting with that idea for 3 whole years, tossing and turning and just living with it, right? Until it became really clear that this is what I want to do. This is the legacy that I want to leave behind. And then I had prepped for it, right? I ensured that there was money. There was enough money for me to tide over at least 2 years. And I also knew that there was some family backup, though it wasn't easy, but I knew that I would do it. More than anything else, that conviction, ki ye karna hai, aur abhi nahi karungi, to kabhi nahi karungi. There was also some amount of planning that went into it. And most importantly, this time around also, even the last time around actually, but this time also, there was proper handover that happened in the job that I was doing. Because it was a planned move. I knew I wanted to do this. So I ensured that my relationships, which I'd built over so many years in the corporate world, was taken care of. So it was done well. And both sides, so the leaving the previous job and entering into my own startup journey, both was thought through. And I think I prefer a planned approach.
Excellent. So two things, right? So first thing is, if you're vouching on someone's idea and which you don't totally believe in, so there is so much soul searching that goes for an idea to turn into a business. So if you're just feeling like, you know, aaj mujhe business karne ka mood kar raha hai and I want to just join someone and, you know, like two friends coming together or a couple coming together. So do it thoughtfully that really, is this the idea or is this the business I really want to do?
Yeah, because it's not short term, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is something 10 years, right? Like, log bolte ki, you know, ek saal dekhte hain and fir dekhte hain. No, that's not how it works. It takes at least 5 to 10 years for a business to really succeed.
Right, but ek saal mein thoda sa at least pata chalta hai ki, do I want to do this or not? Right. I don't think you get answers. There is no overnight success.
Absolutely.
Wo hota hi nahi hai. But at least you know ki, I want to wake up every day to doing this. For the rest of my life or for the next 10 years or whatever it is, right? So that 1 year is good to only understand if this is what you want to do. But beyond that, it's a much, much longer journey.
True. And also the second thing, which what you talked about was that whole transition that you make from that job to that entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
Keeping those relationships intact, because normally kya hota hai, like, oh, I'm ready to do this. Let's jump. Baki log jaye bhaad mein. Let's just start. Yeah. Don't do that because, you know, at the end of it, those relationships.
No, but there's some people who do that also. And, you know, that was just like my journey. But there are people who do it and they're okay with that, right?
True, I feel personally, if you leave on good terms, do a proper handover, that, in fact, it's so ethical to do that, right? You're not...
No, because at the end of the day, in your entrepreneurial stint also, right, networking is so important. And at the end of the day, there are skills that you have honed being in your corporate career. right? There are certain things that you know which might be intrinsic to the job that you were doing, but there were other skills, and those relationships that you've made come in so handy, right? Because like my experience has been in retail, everything that I know about business, a lot of it comes from the work that I've done in the past. So I know even today that if I have a query, I can just pick up the phone and speak to any of my ex-colleagues, right? And they will be there to help me. I mean, you look at your LinkedIn profiles, right? Half the people that we know are from our corporate careers.
And all our clients.
And a lot of them are also people who we've referred clients to or who've also come to us as clients. So you can't take that lightly. But more than that is something that we need to also address is how long do you need to test waters before you jump?
You're absolutely right. And I've been an ideapreneur for a good 13 years, right? So the first time I had all these ideas brewing in my head. I could have been these big lead generation companies. And that was my first business idea.
Didn't you win some award in college for that?
Yeah, I did. I won a few business plan competitions. And I was like, okay, I'll start when I'm ready. You don't ever get ready unless until you are preparing for that readiness to transition. I thought, a job will prepare me to do that. And I joined a media house thinking, this media house will give me, because it was an event-related business plan. Did that for 3 years, won a few awards there also. Then I was like, let me get some tech experience in the place so that, then I'll be ready. So that idea kept just sitting on the back shelf. It was one job to another job. And during that stint also, I was like, the transition from media to tech was also interesting because I was thinking I never had any technology background. I was throughout a commerce graduate, and then I did my MBA. And this was all high tech.
And now you wear the tech hat.
I do.
So I'm the engineer between us. That's the funny part, right?
True. And then it was cloud computing and edge computing. I took 6 months while I was working in the media house to see where the technology is also meant for me. And it was all gibberish and different languages, everything. But that transition happened. And then when I made that transition also, I was not able to start my own venture. I worked for a startup for 10 years.
Right.
And that was an excellent experience. But till, that job was also taken away from me, like by life or chance.
Sometimes you're pushed to it, right?
Yeah, by life or chance. And then we met. And that was also another interesting story, which we'll keep for next time. But it just happened. Then those 6 months when I was out of that job, that helped me to decide now it's the time. And there was so much support that came during that time.
Right. But tell me this, I remember you telling me that while you were doing your media work, you were also testing waters in the tech company. You were at some point in time almost not sleeping at night, and you were like a zombie for some time. tell us a little more about that, because I know there'll be so many people who are looking at setting up their own business, right? They would be maybe moonlighting. I don't know if that's the right... tell us a little bit about that.
I wouldn't technically call it moonlighting, but yeah, you could say it too. I was done. I was bored of doing all those promotions and... Event activations. So after doing that, I was like, how do I transition to technology? So the opportunity came through a family business. And when that came in, I was like, I don't understand cloud computing. So to first jump into a new venture where I'm also trying to work with family members now as a... So I wanted to really see whether I'm, one, capable, whether I can also learn the new skill sets to do this work. So 6 months, I was like morning 9 to 7. I used to work there. After that, in my day job and at Group M. And then after that, I used to come back home. And from 10 to 4 or 5.
So you had your dinner, you rested a bit, and then you would start doing the night shift. So you were like the night warrior.
Yeah, I was the
And what about your weekends? Like, were you working?
I was working on the weekends as well. And then there was like literally like 19 hours of work and 4 or 5 hours
so
of
you
sleep.
Did this
I used to like literally pick up my laptop and eat food, take those calls and like...
But there was no burnout? Like, didn't you... Like, how did you do it?
I think more
so
than
long?
Burnout, I had cabin fever once the transition happened, right? Because...
What is cabin fever? That's a new term. What is
The media was like this hustling, bustling energy, meeting hundreds of people every day. Like, not, I won't say 100, but so many people every day for me.
I have paycheck fever. But okay, I get it, coming to you, yeah. But,
and then transition to IT was just sitting, sitting in front of this laptop and just
not meeting people. You
and this was pre-COVID. There was no concept of remote work then. Right. And then doing this day in, day out without any friends. There was family who was wondering, like, you know, why aren't you eating on time? What is going on?
So are you saying that people should moonlight before they jump in fully?
I think more than moonlighting. Moonlighting would be also about working during the hours which have been...
Right.
So that's cheating, I would say. Don't do that. And especially don't take a pay while you're moving.
Right. So it's about if you are doing your own work during office hours...
Do justice to that.
Yeah, like don't do that. I mean, these do not... keep them both separate.
Yeah.
So that...
And also, there should not be a transition. Can't be like doing it in the same industry. That's what I personally feel. If you're doing it in the same industry that... and you're
That's
taking
ethically
that,
wrong.
Ethically wrong. So ethics are very important.
Right.
And for that, I think you make sure that you're doing it on a different time. You're right. Not taking a pay. You're just working on the idea. And once you're ready, then take that plunge fully. And then, as you rightly said, right, transition nicely.
So what I hear you saying is that one has to test waters. So you explore it, but explore on your own time. And try, and it's not, it need not be something, or maybe it's not something that you get remunerated for. But you at least keep your mind open. You learn new things. You really see if this is meant for you. Because sometimes in your head, you might think that something might be good for you, but when you actually go and do it, it might not be really, you know, sparking the things that you thought would be good for you, right? So, okay. But so you're saying is it's important to explore, and before you take that transition and you do that jump, you must get your toes wet.
True.
Right?
And once you're ready, then just test the MVP, right? Especially if you're, in my case, I was transitioning from one job to another job. Right. But in case you're an entrepreneur, like trying to do a business,
yeah.
At that point of time, also test, you should be ready with the business plan and you should be ready with the minimum viable product.
So before you come on to the MVP, which is the minimum viable product, what is more important, which I felt, is while you're at your job, at least have clarity in terms of what is the business idea, right? So, and business idea could be a passion project. Maybe you are a lawyer and you suddenly want to become a baker, right? So there might be something that you love to do, but is there a market for it? Is there what we call market fitment, right? So one needs to know that what you want to sell really has a buyer, right? So that merging and having that clarity of the idea and having clarity of who is your most ideal client, right? Who is your most ideal paying client? I won't even just say client. Who is it who's ready to give it the maximum worth? Because only the person who understands what your product is and really values your product is ready to pay the price for it. You know, you mentioned MVP, and I feel that that step, when you are ready to quit your job, must happen when you're ready to go and test your MVP out, right? So you've done all the validation part of it. You know who your ideal customer is. You know the financial roadmap. And now you're ready to jump on and put your MVP out in the market. Share a little more about that.
For me, MVP is one problem, one customer. And it's about just serving that one customer. And tackling that one problem for that customer, that minimum viable product, is all about taking that step.
You know, you spoke about that Lean Startup, the book that you keep.
Ha,
you should share about that because you were so inspired by that.
So 10 years ago, I read this book, and at that point of time, I was just working in a startup, and I was so excited to just read about the book and implement those things in that startup. But it had grown beyond, right? That startup was already like, you know, their product was ready, everything was set and done. But while we did this with Zach, remember the first project we did? We were just talking about website fireframes and the customer journey.
Yes.
So that was our MVP.
Right.
Where we tested it with just one customer. There was just one problem that they just needed help with the wireframes of the website.
Right.
And that gave us that confidence that we can work together.
Right.
So similarly, if you are a baker and you want to start with, you know, just baking that first cake and just delivering it to that one customer in one flavor, and whether they're paying for that, that gives you that confidence to start. That's your MVP there, right there.
So when do you say that the MVP is successful?
Right? Once that one problem is solved, like you get that idea. So if you're a makeup artist, for example, and you're launching your products, you could have a portfolio of 20 products that you want to go, go at it. But today you can just decide who's that ideal paying customer for maybe a blender.
Okay.
And that blender is then taken, and who's going to pay for that blender to me? And it could be...
So you go to market with that one product, which is a blender, and then go all out addressing and solving makeup blending issues for that
customer. And maybe it's just for the makeup artist.
Right.
As a makeup artist, you're just selling as a B2B model.
Right.
And see whether that product has some value. Just make a, just make 100 pieces or make 50 pieces.
Right.
Go into a manufacturer.
Right.
Do a very basic packaging. And then go sell that. And if that sells, then you go on to building another 100 or 200 products, market that, email that. And when that scales, in the middle around like 6 months or a year down the road, then add another product.
Right. And what if the MVP flops?
If it flops, then you know, you then you go back to the drawing board and see, maybe you've not identified the customer properly.
Right. Or there's a problem with the product, itself.
And that's excellent feedback, right? Because it's a low investment.
Right.
While if you, you know, make 10 products, so much is sunk down. And how do you start at that point of time?
Yeah, totally. So if you, like you said, if you were able to go out to market with 10 products in your assortment, you focus down and say, okay, this is what I think is going to be my hero product, or this is what I think is going to be best for me to go out to market with. You go out, you catch 10 people. And I always emphasize, have conversations with people, like, you know, talk to your potential customers, talk to hundreds and hundreds of people, right, before you finalize who your ideal customer is. And you sell to that person. If you see that they are buying your product, then it's successful. Give yourself a conversion ratio, saying that, okay, if I feel that 50% of the people who are approached are ready to buy into what this is, it is a success, right? And then once you have this path and you have that one customer, I would always say, what else can you sell to that customer, right? What we call about share of wallet, right? So this customer needs a blender. What else can I sell to this customer? And not what can I sell to another customer? So catch that one customer and what are the other beauty needs of that customer that I can solve for? And then it becomes easier. Then you go to them with the next product, right? So what we're talking about basically is you're ready to quit your job when you're ready to go to market with an MVP.
That's exactly right. And also about, as you rightly said, it was about the share of wallet.
Right.
Because the cost of acquisition of the customer is so high these days.
Right.
So you keep, just try and sell to that customer, or if it didn't work out, then you move ahead and try another product or try another service. Yeah. But how do you solve for a service-based business in that case? We've talked about product businesses.
Yeah. So give me an example of what is a service-based business.
It could be coaching. It could be about educating. Like, you know, remember that parental coach that we had?
Right, right. So it's the same thing, right? You create... products, like of services, you productize your service to some extent so that you're not reinventing the wheel every time with every customer. So you go to that one type of customer with the service that you have to offer. For example, if it is parental coaching, right, that that lady wanted to sell, and see if you have any takers. You talk to so many parents and then you will realize that there is a certain kind of parent profile that is ready to buy into my service. So in her case, I think she was talking about teenage children and solving for teenage children not listening to their parents, and how was the best way that you could connect with a parent of a teenager so that both people understand each other and they're talking the same language. So she would therefore have to talk to parents of other teenagers, and I think that's what she did. She did the Head Start program with us, and then she had more clarity in terms of the kind of messaging that she could go out with, right? Because messaging makes such a difference, the content, the narrative that you're going to use to talk to which talk to that customer makes all the difference. So yeah, so answering your question, for a service-based, it's similar. You see what is the conversion rate. I've talked to 100 potential customers, but out of them, only 10 people bought in. And then you rework, you go back and see what is the service, where are the tweaks that I can make. Maybe it's a price point issue, maybe it is the quality issue, maybe I'm not communicating well, maybe it is I'm not able to match my timings with their timings, right? So you, it's all, attention is really in the detail, and you have to go in and see what are all the places where there are potential errors and go back and rework, because there are multiple reworks. I mean, talk about us, right? In the last 4 years, we've had like so many reworks and so many pivots of what we've done.
Also, what we learned was about solving the front-end problem and not the back-end problem.
Right. You'll have to explain that more. I'm sure people wouldn't understand that.
So, in the parental coaches, she was just trying to talk to the teenagers as such. And, right. You know, parents getting convinced. And we realized in the whole scenario that she first said, I'm going to, talk to these teenagers. But the problem she realized was in with the parents, and talking to the parents
right.
was a hard.
Right.
And in the last case that we had, like, you know, we had this gifting consultant who was trying to talk about attrition as a problem for these days. And she
was actually trying to talk about gifting services, but she realized the actual problem that she was solving for in corporate gifting was to reduce attrition, right?
And when she leads with reducing attrition, that is a front-end problem for so many people.
Right.
And the backdoor problem was corporate gifting, and this, and that becomes a red ocean, right? Like, there's so many people doing the same business.
Right.
Solving the right problem also for that one customer.
Right.
Becomes extremely essential.
You know, a lot of times the biggest question that potential startup founders want answers to is, am I good enough for this? Yeah. Right? And you know, we keep asking our clients, right? Why is it that you're the right person to solve this problem? Right? And we continuously ask them to go back. You know, the way I look at it is, from the day you were born till this moment in time, why are you the right person to solve this problem? Because of all the experiences that you've had to be here, right? So anybody, even if it's somebody, say, who wants to sell, healthy foods, for example, they might be wanting to sell healthy foods because they've had a bad relationship with food at some point of time in their lives, or whatever it is, because of which they have overcome it. You know, this guy who I met in this conference, he came up to me and we were talking about startups, and he said, I want to start this business where I'm going to recommend people what to wear. And I was like, why are you the right person to recommend? You know, he said, he wanted to create a styling app. So I said, but why are you the right person? And then he said, you know, I used to be very fat and I've now lost weight and I don't know what to do with my body. Like, I don't know how to dress my body. And I realized that there might be lots of people out there who might have the same problem. And we discussed it. I was like, that's exactly it. When you talk to somebody saying that, you know, I used to be fat and now I'm thin and now I need to get new skills in order to understand how to, that is a problem that you're really solving for, right? So that there's a full shift in the narrative, instead of saying, oh, I'm just making a styling app, right? But when you shift it to say, I am making a styling app for people who've lost weight and want to rediscover their own bodies again, right? There's so much affinity. There's so much of a market there. And that's when you find your ideal paying customer, because for that person for whom it's a genuine, real problem, I don't mind paying whatever your subscription price is for it.
Absolutely. And it's also about your experience, right? When you bring your experience, when you bring in your story to that narrative, everything changes.
Right.
And you also know your why, then why are you doing it? And you can go right. back again and again, because you don't want others to feel
that.
Yeah, and
in fact, that guy was an investment banker who was wondering when it is the right time for him to quit and start this. So he was attending that conference to kind of learn more yeah. about how he could do this. So yeah,
I think we must go back to him and like, you know, just
excellent. So yeah, so kind of just to summarize all the things that we've spoken about, firstly, of course, is having clarity about why you're doing what you're doing. Second is to have so much gumption that you're talking to you're able to have that conversation, your friends, family, because you know that you're ready to bet on yourself. you have planned for the rainy day, you have enough of a financial backup, you're ready enough so that now you just need to go out and find your, put in your MVP into place. These are the few things that come to my mind in terms of anything that I've missed out.
No, I think you covered it all.
Great. Mm. Yeah, so that's what it is. If you're ready to take that plunge and leave your corporate career in order to chase those dreams, plan, be ready, and most importantly, be ready to bet on yourself. Thank you.
And if you've enjoyed this conversation, like, subscribe, and follow us at Zach Heart to Biz Network.